This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
PSG spend all this money and Club Brugge show them that money ain't nothing if you don't have the effort and the chemistry. We got that. And to talk a lot about Anfield, Liverpool. What a fantastic performance right there. Man City did the business against Jesse Marsh and Leipzig. We got Atletico Madrid with all the firepower. Where was it? This and so much more. The Wednesday of match day one of the Champions League. We got Dre Cordero in the house. We got Jonathan Johnson coming very, very soon. Qué golazo, Champions League match day one live begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Qué Golazo. I am so happy to be here with you. We're going to talk about all of Wednesday's action and a little bit more. Our man, Jonathan Johnson, is at Club Brugge, so we're going to try and find him. I don't know. Maybe the president of PSG is so mad and Leonardo are so mad that they canceled the entire Wi-Fi at the stadium. So maybe we won't see him. Maybe we will. We will talk about, but we do have the fantastic, the awesome, my friend, mi compa, Dre Cordero. Dre, how are you, bud?
My man, I could not be better. By the way, if somebody wants to send a producer to go look for Jonathan, I would check the stadium bars first. He might be there trying to console himself. Just a thought. I could not be happier to be here. I could not be happier to be part of the CBS family. It's been a wild couple of weeks with World Cup qualifying, with Serie A getting underway, and now this much football on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. I mean, let's get into it.
Let's absolutely get into it. There's so much to discuss. Tuesday gave us a little taster and Wednesday brought the magic, depending on who you support, of course. By the way, before we get going, if you're watching this live on YouTube, we want your comments. We want your questions. So send them along. Our producer, Des Norris, will put them up on the screen and hopefully we'll read them. Keep it PG, everybody. Come on now. We're a family show, at least before 9 p.m. But we do want to hear from you. We also want you to make sure that you tweet Dre Cordero, LM Echegaray, but Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter as well. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts later on, please leave a 5-star rating and review. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, as I mentioned, and CBS Sports and your CBS Sports app. All right, Dre, let's get into it. Champions League action. Let's begin, of course, with what just happened in Belgium. Club Brugge and PSG, they tied 1-1. There was a Kylian Mbappé injury. His ankle was bothering him after a collision in the first half. Ander Herrera did score first, but funnily enough, Dre, I thought that going 1-0 down meant that Club Brugge was playing better and actually woke them up a little bit and then ended 1-0. But I want your initial reactions to PSG tying 1-1 with Club Brugge, with that trio that we saw for the first time.
Yeah, I think the headline has to be about Leo Messi, right? Because it's Messi's Champions League debut with Paris. And so if we touch on that first, it looked every bit like Messi had played just 25 minutes with Paris prior to this game. Like someone who's still trying to figure it out, what's around him. I thought his touches were really limited in the first half. And it's curious that it was after Mbappe's injury that Mauro Icardi comes on, that Messi starts to get touches closer to the 18. And that's not because of the quality, you know, comparing Icardi versus Mbappe. I think 10 out of 10 would take Kylian Mbappe over Mauro Icardi, but it's because of the presence of a center forward taking up some of that attention away and giving Messi a chance to arrive closer to the area. So I think it's almost like a barely passing grade for Leo Messi. He did hit the woodwork. He had a good chance late on, but there's certainly better games to come from them. I would say that it's not just that Brugge played better in the opening minutes. I think on the balance of the 90 minutes, Brugge were the better team. They were proactive. They played in Paris's half. They created opportunities, had more shots on target, despite significantly less possession. I think they knew how they wanted to play. And I'm blown away by how courageous and proactive their approach was.
Absolutely 100% correct. I think there's something to be said, Dre Cordero, about the fact that COVID obviously taking away the fans for so long, you could feel that energy of the crowd just like completely intoxicating. PSG, I think, to a point. There is a thing, though, and you were talking about Lionel Messi And obviously, you know, there were moments, there were flashes, a passable grade. Of course, Kylian Mbappé with a great assist. He was injured, Neymar and stuff. But something that continues to worry me about PSG, and I want to talk about Bruges more because, as you mentioned, they were so great. But there's no midfield, Ray Cordero. I feel like it goes from the back four and it goes straight to that trio. And when Icardi came on as the number nine, attracting that front. But there's nothing in the midfield. And Club Bruges saw that. They pressured PSG the entire time. They gave them a taste of their own medicine. And it was really remarkable to see in many ways. But PSG, my God, and dare I say, sometimes a little boring.
You know, it reminds me, I was thinking back to the transition that Barcelona went, and follow me on this, but there was a transition for Barcelona from the Xavi, Busquets, Iniesta team that dominated the midfield under Pep Guardiola to Luis Enrique's team with Messi, Neymar, and Luis Suarez, where all of a sudden they realized that they were top heavy, that the point was just to get the ball to the front three as quickly as possible and let those guys create. And I think there's an element of that to what Mauricio Pochettino is doing right now. And why you saw the long balls out of the back. In fact, that worked brilliantly early on. There was that Kimpembe ball to Mbappe, who was isolated in the near side. That creates the goal for Ander Herrera with Mbappe pulling it back. And so I think you're going to see a more direct PSG just by nature of where are your best pieces. If they're your front three, then you need to get the ball there as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, if you're just looking at everything in terms of the game itself, the home side did definitely hold more of their own, and they attacked that left side of PSG, which we have said it already on the pod that, you know, it's pretty vulnerable. Here's a question to begin with. If PSG don't win the Champions League this season, would it be a catastrophic failure? We asked you, and right now it's 100% yes, shame on everyone involved, and 0% no, they can bounce back next year. What do you think, Dre?
I think that the bar has been set for teams like Paris and like Bayern, and maybe those are the only two where everybody else a little bit deluded, where it is Champions League title or bust in the perception of most fans, right? You're expected to dominate your domestic league if you're Bayern or Paris, especially now Paris adding Leo Messi and other pieces like Hakimi. And so they've put themselves in that situation where it's unreasonable. And we know that no team is obligated to win the Champions League. There are a handful of clubs that have a real chance, and you need the ball to bounce your way in the knockout stages. We're a long way away from getting to that. But there are teams like Paris and like Bayern that are going to be judged on basically four games all season, four or five games. And those games all come a lot closer to May than where we are right now. I think most people will tell you that if PSG don't win the Champions League, it'll be a failure only because they're expected to win literally everything else that they play.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, a word of a shout out to Hans Vaneken. 4 goals in 7 matches, all competitions this season. He was tremendous. You have to give him credit. And, you know, final words on this game before we move on, Dre. What else did you pinpoint? Did you see from this draw?
Yeah, so if I could just highlight just how courageous Bruges were. They didn't sit in a low block. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of possession, but they were in a mid-block, basically, really compact lines. And so when they won the ball back, they could arrive with numbers. It wasn't just counterattacks where players like Vaneken were completely isolated with nothing around them. In fact, they had the pieces to try and triangulate to get past PSG. And I thought that's a really clever approach from the smaller team, the underdog, against giants like Paris. And I hope, I have my fingers crossed that more of the underdogs going forward take similar approach, take sort of courageous, proactive approaches against the big hitters. Yeah, it may backfire spectacularly, or you may give fans, like they did today, the show of their life. Because every time that the camera panned to the stands and the crowd in this match, you just saw happy faces who looked like they were in absolute disbelief at the way that their club was, not just the result, but the way they were playing against Paris Saint-Germain. And then the other little point I would give here is that Messi did not play particularly well. Yes, he's going to need some time to sort of adapt to what's around him. But what really surprised me is how poor his passing was. To see a game in which Messi had about 74% pass completion in the opposition's half is ridiculous, right? Because you think he's going to be picking out those passes brilliantly. And so I think he's still sort of learning the names of some of the players on his squad. And we'll see much better things to come from him.
I think Marco Verratti was severely missed today in one way. What was the biggest upset to you, Young Boys or Club Bruges?
That's a really hard pick, right? I think it has to be Young Boys because they actually got the win. And you know what? Just because it gives us a chance to shout out Jordan Pefok for a 95th minute game winner, the U.S. Internationals doing things in big stages.
That's true. They did get the win as well. That's a major thing. But make no mistake about it. I said it earlier on HQ. PSG needed to start with a bang. They did not. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as we move on. All right, let's keep going here. We talked about Liverpool against AC Milan. The only time these two face each other prior to today is in a final. We talked to Luis Garcia. He was excited about it. Anfield, we just knew the crowd was going to deliver. The atmosphere, amazing. And my goodness, what a game. Great Cordero, because Liverpool were just like looked amazing for 20 minutes. If it wasn't for Mike Maignan, you know, really AC Milan could have suffered. But out of nowhere, at halftime, AC Milan were leading 2-1. Crazy. And then, of course, the game developed and just an amazing, amazing performance. Jordan Henderson and a banger. Give me your thoughts on this game.
I'm glad you brought up Mike Maignan, because he's been such a stellar goalkeeper for so long, part of that league championship team in the French Ligue 1 last year. A really sort of adventurous goalkeeper who can play with his feet, but he also, as we showed you today, has the reactions, makes a huge penalty save to keep Milan in it. Obviously, Liverpool get that golazo from Jordan Henderson just outside of the area, which is struck so sweetly. Those are the ones that you almost hear the pop in your own head, right? When yeah, anybody who's been out beautiful. There on the pitch hitting it, you can just feel
it's like it's like Skittles is coming out of his cleat. You just know it's just pure magic.
Yeah, just gorgeous. But Milan, you said 20 minutes. I would say 40 minutes, right? I would double that. For 40 minutes, Liverpool just did not allow Milan to play. They suffocated them. They didn't allow them to play out of the back. Once Milan do get into the final third, they have some pieces. Like Ante Rebic, for example, against Lazio this weekend was stellar, providing two assists. The first big Serie A game for them this year, and he stepped up. I think he continued that good form today. He was a constant threat when they could get to the final third. The thing is, for 40 minutes, they barely saw sight of the opposition's goal. They got essentially rope-a-dope for 40 minutes and two big haymakers, and they go into the break up 2-1. Liverpool second half get an early goal to level it, and then Henderson's game winner afterwards. I think there's probably good things to come from Milan, but this was a game they were expected to lose, and up until about 40 minutes in, you thought there's no chance they were in it. So I think that they were as competitive as they were is a good sign for Stefano Pioli and a good sign for Milan.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dre. I think Jonathan Johnson is at the bar crying. Yeah. He's struggling to connect with us right now. No, we're just kidding. Obviously, at the stadium, it can be a little bit difficult to connect with us. So if he does join, that's great. But if not, don't worry. Dre and I have you covered. Mohamed Salah on his 100th appearance, by the way, 72 goals. A great performance from him. But Milan, as you mentioned, those haymakers, that was in the space of 1 minute and 47 seconds. It just goes to show how quickly things can just turn around. And also the fact that I think Jurgen Klopp, Dre, needs to remember that as good as they are in terms of press, they can be a little bit vulnerable on the counter.
They can, but they make it so difficult for teams, especially at home, for teams to get any sort of rhythm, right? And Milan will be much more used to the pace of Serie A, which would be a little bit slower, a little bit more deliberate. And it did seem like, at least for the good better part of 40 minutes, that they were playing a different sport from Liverpool. Players were being closed down very quickly. They weren't allowed to think on the ball. And it's so different from what they face week in and week out in the Italian top flight, that adjustment, making that adjustment was going to be a big deal for them. I thought, Liverpool sort of performed as expected. I think they dominated the match, even if, they got the win, but it's not just about, 3-2. It's the fact that they were the protagonists throughout the entirety of the 90 minutes, save for those few seconds that Milan finally got their touches in. And one thing I'll say about Milan is when they get close to the opposition's goal, when it's Rebic, Leao, Brahim Diaz, who just looks like miles better than the player that he was at Real Madrid, barely getting any minutes. They can play some really attractive football. I think Salamakers can get the job done. Ben Nasser was brilliant. This is a guy who won the AFCON a couple of years back and was the best player at the Africa Cup of Nations. I think he's one of those like fantasistas in Serie A that are just so much fun to watch. I'm impressed with Milan going forward. But then defensively, you have some questions because Teo Hernandez just allows Salah to go into the area. Calabria is keeping Salah on that goal. And there's those little lapses of concentration that against a team that is as talented and as rock and roll as Jurgen Klopp likes to say, as Liverpool are, they're just going to punish you and they're going to beat you with it.
Yeah, you got to be real quick whenever they enter anything outside of the box. By the way, Jordan Henderson scored that goal, the first one in the Champions League for 7 years, by the way. So that's a good one for him. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're listening this on audio, we're going to take a quick break. But if you're watching this live, we're going to keep on rolling. Don't forget to stick with us. Que golazo, Champions League match day 1. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, everybody, we are sticking around. If you're watching this live with Dre Cordero. Dre, quickly, because I didn't talk to you. Dre, quickly, because I didn't talk to you. How's your experience been so far going back with your good old chum and my good friend, Matteo Bonetti, Serie A? How's it been going?
So it's been unbelievable. The level that we're working at, the love of the game that you see from every single person in front of the cameras, in front of the mics, behind the cameras, behind the mics at CBS, whether working in Denver for the Nations League in the summer, working in New York, working in Stanford, wherever it is, you're just surrounded by just quality people, great professionals who want to put the best product out there. And most importantly, a bunch of football fans, right? Because I think one of the issues with the coverage in American soccer or in soccer in America has been having, you know, NFL execs and you know, other sports sort of appealing to the casual fan. How do we draw in? How do we bring in the non-soccer fan? I say, forget that. You've got a huge crowd, a huge number, and a country of 300 plus million people who love this game. And I think CBS and Paramount Plus are doing a really good job catering to those people. As far as Matteo is family to me. Matteo Bonetti is maybe the most knowledgeable person about Italian soccer in this country. Him and I essentially lived in a 6x6 box together for many years, covering Serie A for about six seasons. I did the math, and conservatively, I think we did at minimum 700 Serie A games, Matteo and I. And so after 4 years to get back in the booth, like riding a bike, loved it. Almost you could read each other's thoughts. You could finish each other's sentences if you wanted to. He's delightful, and I'm delighted to be working with him.
I love it, and we love watching and listening to you. It's so fantastic. But let's keep going here with the Champions League, by the way, because let's talk about a Serie A team, Inter Milan against Real Madrid. It was sort of a back and forth for a while, and then Camavinga, Rodrigo, the young boys, they took care of business, and Real Madrid take, if I'm being honest, three very precious points against Inter Milan. What do you make of that one?
Yeah, I think at this point it's voodoo. I think with Madrid, it's voodoo in the Champions League. It doesn't matter what their form is like. It doesn't matter whether they're good, not good, whether they play well, don't play well. There's something about the bright lights of the Champions League. And obviously not always, you know, they don't win it every year, but the other 13-time European champions. And I hate the pukey sports cliche of the find ways to win, but they genuinely do. And I mean, today, after a pretty abysmal, you know, hour plus from Real Madrid, where Inter were clearly the better team, where especially through those three center backs who are not just really good defenders, but also very good distributors. It seemed as though Madrid didn't have a response, didn't have a reaction. And then in an instance down the final stretch, a gorgeous ball from Fede Valverde over the top to Camavinga, who's making his Champions League debut with Real Madrid, who squares it across, and Rodrigo, of all people, scores a goal, a really pretty goal for Real Madrid. And it's just that magic about the European stage that Madrid always responds to.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about that combination of that trio with Fede Valverde, of course, being 23 years old, Rodrigo being a teenager, and Camavinga being 18 as well. It says a lot about where Real Madrid are going, heading, and probably, you know, thinking to go ahead, not just in the near future, but right now in the Champions League.
And you can say, yes, Madrid have had all of the success with Kroos, who wasn't available today, with Luka Modric, with Casemiro. Ramos obviously was a big part of it as well, but the future is pretty bright, at least when it comes to that midfield. If you have Camavinga and Fede Valverde getting more minutes, resting the legs of Modric now, who I think is like about 46 years old at this point, and Toni Kroos, who you want to limit his minutes as much as possible so that they're fresh when Madrid are one of those teams that's going to be judged on four or five games that happen down the final stretch of the season. And so having that quality rotation in the middle with Camavinga and Fede Valverde is absolutely huge for Madrid. But you know me, I got to talk a little bit about the Serie A teams. And I
talk to me. Let's go. Yeah, well, you get a bonus, I think, if you include a little bit.
Yeah, basically, I'm still very impressed with Inter. Even in defeat, yes, this was at home. It was a game that they desperately wanted to win and probably did enough to win, because while Rodrigo scored the goal, Thibaut Courtois was Real Madrid's best player in this game. But the way that Inter approached, most teams that play with three at the back, whenever you see that the three center backs have the most touches, they're basically passing it among themselves, right? Trying to lure the opposition out to create some space. That's not really the case with the Nerazzurri. They have three good distributors out of the back. Their wing backs, as opposed to what we saw with Barcelona and Ronald Koeman, where they're very deep and playing almost scared, their wing backs for Inter are often the highest players up the pitch and trying to get touches in the 18. And so they attack you with their defenders, which makes it really, really difficult. And Madrid, in the first half especially, didn't have a response for it. Madrid did not have a shot on target until close to the hour mark when Carvajal was the first one to test the goalkeepers of Handanovic. And so I think even with Lukaku gone, even with Hakimi gone, this is an Inter team that is still, for me, one of the, maybe the favorite to win the Scudetto in Serie A, a team that can do some damage in the Champions League.
Yep, absolutely. We're going to come in here from San Marin. AC Milan absolutely broke Liverpool down before halftime. That's correct. But when you're a good team, you pick yourself back again. And Liverpool did exactly that. By the way, Inter Milan are a nice way of trying to figure out, you know, you leave, Antonio Conte leaves, Lukaku leaves, but it doesn't matter. You have to adapt. You have to figure a way out, especially in this modern game. And that's something that's a nice little mirror to what just we saw from PSG. By the way, you have to adapt to the modern game. And to your point, that's exactly what they're doing.
I'm disappointed with myself because I almost allowed us to move on from talking about Inter without bringing up Marcelo Brozovic, who I think is maybe the player, the best player that's least talked about in the world. And yet he's not glamorous, but he's part of that brilliant Croatia team that made the final of the 2018 World Cup. And he is very much the conductor and metronome of Inter. For all the talk about how good their defense is, of Nico Barella being one of the best young players, if not the best young player in Serie A, and now the addition of Calhanoglu, who I think is going to be good, at least on set pieces for them. I get some backlash from Serie A fans whenever I see Calhanoglu delivers a good ball on dead balls, but he does, just, you know, at me, whatever. But Marcelo Brozovic is what makes Inter tick, and he had another really strong performance today. Edin Dzeko has been a huge addition for them as well. He's not going to score the volume of goals that Romelu Lukaku did. He's not probably going to come close to it, but he serves a very useful purpose as that target forward who's not just going to be knocking balls down for the wingers, knocking balls down for Lautaro Martinez, but creating for himself as well. When I watch him, it's almost balletic when you watch Dzeko play, because there's no wasted movement. Everything is with purpose, and he's so long and tall that he's so difficult for defenders to deal with. I think Dzeko is in for a terrific season with Inter as long as he stays healthy.
Yep, keeping it in the Serie A family and buying a player that knows Serie A was key for Inter Milan as Lukaku left. And by the way, well done, Real Madrid, blah, blah, blah. But to Des Norris's point, there's a new sheriff in town, because remember, Sheriff, their first ever win, they beat Shakhtar Donetsk 2-0. They have a Peruvian, Gustavo Lulanto. So I'm extra happy, by the way. I just wanted to shout that one out. How good was that one? Adama Traore, no, not that one. He scored. And Cristiano, no, not that one. He played very well as well. A pretty good win for Sheriff, the new sheriff in town.
Yeah, I'm going to actually just sort of sit back and listen to you talking about them, because looking at the quality of games that we had today on the schedule, how many people had Sheriff Shakhtar sort of circled on their calendars? You did, because there was a Peruvian involved. Exactly. So you tell me what you saw in that game.
No, I mean, listen, they completely took advantage again of the fact that the energy was coming for them, because it was, you know, their introduction to the Champions League. They were very composed, especially off the ball, because Shakhtar Donetsk are a team that are possession friendly. They like to keep it. They like to take their time. And Sheriff knew it, and they just hit them on the counter. And Cristiano, by the way, some David Beckham-esque crossing in that game. It was fantastic. But when you're a new team in the Champions League, the only thing that matters is 3 points. That's it. That's all that matters. And that's exactly what they got. So well done to Sheriff. But let's move on to Manchester City, the Sheriff of Manchester, unfortunately, to the red side of Manchester. Don't want to hear that. But they beat RB Leipzig and Jesse Marsh, who, you know what? They did put up a fight, but Manchester City are just too deep, too strong, too talented. Jack Grealish scored a ridiculous goal, but it was opened by Nathan Ake from a corner, a Jagielka assist, by the way. And then the goals just kept on coming. Every now and again, Leipzig kept, poaching a little bit, prickling, maybe just getting that goal to maybe make it interesting, Drake Cordero. But in the end, Man City are just too strong.
Yeah, this game had all the goals, right? All of them. It was 9 goals in this game, 6-3. It was fairly close until maybe the last half hour or so, or you got that João Cancelo goal with a quarter of an hour to go. I think that's when it was done. And you asked the question.
Could have got a hat trick. So, that's also good for Leipzig.
You asked the question of, where was Paris's midfield? Christian Kunku is a former Paris player, former midfielder, who's been, more of an attacking player since leaving. And he had, as you mentioned, the hat trick for RB Leipzig. Delighted to see an American manager at this stage, and not just one, but two, right? David Wagner is also involved. This is all we've ever wanted. And there's so much focus on the U.S. internationals that are playing now with Chelsea and Juventus and Barcelona and whatnot. But it's a really, really big deal to have American coaches and coaches with a U.S. background who are making headway for other coaches for the future, right? Because initially there was that stigma about American players in Europe, and your passport almost worked against you unless you were like a dual national, like a Giuseppe Rossi, for example, who opted to play for Italy. And not that I'm mad or anything, but I'll talk to him about it at the weekend when we cover Serie A.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, be careful. Yeah. He's a colleague now.
Yeah, exactly. I think he'll be fine with it. So to see coaches doing it and competitive, because let's face it, RB Leipzig were competitive against Manchester City, who are, one, two, or three best team on the planet right now. I think the conversation is probably between Paris, City, and Bayern, as it is most years. To be competitive against them away from home is a good sign for RB Leipzig and for Jesse Marsch. It shows that the process is working.
Yeah, Jesse Marsch, a friend of the show, by the way. He's, aside from a great manager, a fantastic human being. So hopefully they can turn things around there. That was Pep Guardiola's 300th game in charge, by the way, and Jack Grealish's first Champions League appearance. All right, I'll put two in one here. Besiktas was the earlier game against Dortmund. Erling Haaland got one. Jude Bellingham, his stock just continues to go on the up. That was 2-1 to Borussia Dortmund. But Erling Haaland, 21 goals in the Champions League for the 21-year-old in 21 matches, I believe, in 2021. Oh, he was born in July 21 as well, 21st. So there's a lot of 21 there. But any thoughts from that one, Besiktas, Dortmund, Erling Haaland, and how they're looking?
Yeah, Haaland was born to score goals, honestly. And I think we saw the sort of Messi, I guess we're still living it, but we're in the twilight of the Messi, Cristiano, Ronaldo era, right? And we thought, these two extraterrestrials, we're never going to see anything like this. It's the first time that we see players scoring, a goal per game since the days of, Ferenc Puskas. And it'll be generations before we see anyone remotely close to these numbers. Not necessarily, right? Like, I think what we're seeing from Haaland is extraterrestrial level goal scoring. And he's not going to be, I think maybe Cristiano's a better comparison because he's not going to be, I don't think, the playmaker that Messi is or have the variety to his game necessarily. But the guy was born to score goals. He's an absolute machine. He's a conveyor belt of goals. And it doesn't matter whether it's with Salzburg in the Champions League, whether it's with Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League, or wherever he moves on in the future. The most exciting, we can talk about Kylian Mbappe. We can talk about some other young stars. But he is just freakishly good at football, Haaland, and must-see TV anytime he plays. Because if you watch Borussia Dortmund play, Haaland plays, and he doesn't score, you're almost surprised that he doesn't get a goal. You mentioned the numbers. What was it?
21 Champions League goals for the in 21 games.
That's an absurd amount of goals. And I think we're watching something just truly special. And maybe, we can pretend to appreciate it now.
17 games. I'm sorry. Our producer corrected me. Even better. Ridiculous.
So I think we can pretend to say, we know what we're seeing. Oh, he's really, really good. I don't know that it's hit us yet necessarily. By the way, producer Des Norris. So
he's annoying the hell out of me. But because JJ somehow got out of the bathroom or wherever he was hiding. But Jonathan Johnson is here. JJ, how are you, my friend? I mean, it was a great energy, great stadium for Club Brugge. But what did you make of it? You saw it live, 1-1 in that game. Would love to hear your thoughts, JJ.
Yeah, guys, happy to finally be joining you after a lot of drama. Absolutely zero Wi-Fi access during the whole game. So feeling pretty glad to be reconnected with the world. But no, it was a really absorbing contest. It was also just, surreal to see Neymar, Messi, Mbappe taking to the pitch at the same time together. But also, see Club Brugge giving as good as they got. And I think that they were good value for the draw that they came away with. And I don't think anyone could really begrudge them maybe even the win, the way that they played. You know, they have a very talented team. They've got some very good players. De Kittler, Noah Lang, just two of those guys. I thought Nsoki was super as well against his former team. You know, PSG never really got going. I mean, okay, they had moments where, you know, Messi hit the crossbar. You know, there were flashes of brilliance, but more question marks than answers from this PSG. So obviously, there were holes in the midfield and the creativity. Dembélé suspended, which will be the case for the next two games. The importance of getting Verratti back fit, again, underlined. And now you've got the concern over Kylian Mbappe as well.
JJ, let me ask you, do you see the same role for Verratti this year that we saw last year, where he was more of an attacking midfielder, a little bit closer to a number 10 than to like the regista that we'd seen from Verratti forever? Now that it is so top heavy, so you got those three monsters up top, does that by necessity mean Verratti has to drop a little bit more, has to drop deeper in the midfield to try and be more of a link-up?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the way that PSG are playing at the moment, and they absolutely need somebody who's closer to defence and can get the ball and link the two areas of the pitch. Because Verratti was decent as a makeshift number 10, but he was by no means the long-term solution. And you look at the guys that PSG is trying to put out on the pitch at the moment, the roles they're playing. You know, Wijnaldum really, really struggled against Bruges because he wasn't playing in, you know, the sort of role that really gets him to thrive. And I also think that PSG really needed a defensive enforcer in that midfield, and they didn't have one out there. Herrera's not one, Paredes isn't one. Danilo is one, but he came in off the bench. And personally, I would have gone for someone like Marquinhos, someone who's been proven to be very, very good at the defensive side of things when he plays in the midfield, but also can offer something from deep, you know, almost like a deep-lying playmaker. So, you know, I think if anyone was playing a makeshift role or should have been playing a makeshift role, it would have been Marquinhos. I think that would have given PSG a lot more balance in that midfield. You know, it's great that Herrera's on this goal-scoring run, but there's only so many games where he's going to be able to take those chances that come his way. It's not a long-term solution. And once again, the question is going to be, you know, how is Pochettino going to set up this team when he has all of the players available to him? Because it is a real headache, and there is going to be at least one or two big names who miss out regularly once he has his preferred starting 11. And there's other big questions as well, like, you know, why was Neymar, you know, pretty much invisible for the entirety of the 90 minutes tonight?
What's the latest on Kylian Mbappe, Jonathan Johnson? Obviously, the collision happened even earlier before he in the first half, but he was clearly bothered by it for a while. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, he took a few knocks during the course of the match, and it became obvious in the second half when he went down that would probably be it for him. Pochettino has been asked that in the press conference, which is still going on behind me at this moment in time. And he said it's going to be a couple of days before they get the results back of the tests and can work out exactly how much damage has been done. You know, he didn't want to say too much about how worried he and the club might be at this moment in time. But obviously, just losing Mbappe during the game, you know, to a potential injury is a massive blow, especially the way he started this season, you know, because he's pretty much been the most consistent player, certainly in terms of, you know, the goals coming in, with the exception of Herrera, right? And like I said, that's a streak that's not going to last all season long. And it is going to be a concern now for Pochettino, especially when you look at somebody like Icardi, who came on in his place and just seems so incompatible with the rest of that attack.
So, JJ, we actually talked about this a little bit before you were able to join us. So I just want to like touch on it again, because, yes, nobody is ever going to pick Mauro Icardi to play ahead of Kylian Mbappe or Neymar or Messi. But there was one change when Icardi came on, and that's that Messi all of a sudden starts getting touches a little bit closer to the 18, has more opportunities to actually shoot. You think about Mbappe being a guy who wants the ball out wide, where he's isolated and he can take players on or play in front of him. Neymar the same. Neymar's one of the few players in the world, a la Ronaldinho back in the day, who can pick the ball up wide at the midfield line, dribble two or three players and attack from there. There is something that I think is a sort of a systemic puzzle for Pochettino now, which is how you get Messi touches close to the 18 when neither Mbappe nor Neymar are going to be doing that dirty work to attract the center backs and to keep them busy. That seems to be one of the big challenges for Paris.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, something that we do need to bear in mind is this is the first time that Pochettino has been able to align these guys on the pitch. You'd hope for his sake that it's not going to be the last time for a while, given Mbappe's injury. We'll have to see how that one pans out. But, you know, I also think that it would be silly to plan for the attack without trying to include someone like Icardi. You know, Icardi is here, he's probably now going to be here for the rest of the season. So, you know, you may as well sort of make the best of the situation and try to find a way to utilize him from time to time, because he gives PSG something that the other guys in attack don't. That's, you know, a completely new outlet. And yes, obviously, the go-to guys in the attack are going to be the likes of Neymar, the likes of Mbappe, you know, guys who can use their pace and trickery, you know, to open up opportunities at the drop of a hat. You know, Messi as well, potentially playing in a free role. You know, there were still some flashes of his trademark brilliance where he was taking it across the penalty box. You know, he still manages to have that magnetic ball control as well. It was obvious even as PSG found themselves under the cosh late on. And, you know, I think it's going to be a question of fine-tuning and how much time that Pochettino can actually get with these guys being out on the pitch together. You know, and I think coming into another big match at the weekend against Lyon will really help, assuming that Mbappe is fit enough to feed them, because otherwise Pochettino is going to have to make all the plans for the next couple of weeks, and that's where it becomes tricky, because in Ligue 1 he can call on someone like Maria, who's immediately you know, a creative boost to the attack, but then they're going to still have to do without them in Champions League for City and possibly Leipzig as well. Di Maria definitely out in both of those games, and we'll have to wait and see with Mbappe.
We will have to wait and see. But Jonathan Johnson, we appreciate it. We know that you're in the stadium. We know that you're about to replicate in Bruges as well. So you're Colin Farrell. You just got to find your Brendan Gleeson, I guess. But Jonathan Johnson, we really appreciate all the commentary. Get home safe, my friend, and we will see you next time.
Thanks a lot. Brendan Gleeson, Villa fan, Villa family.
See you later, JJ. That was Jonathan Johnson right there, speaking from the stadium right there in Belgium. So let's wrap things up here, Dre Cordero. I wanted to just quickly touch on Atletico Madrid and Porto. They spend all this money, we're all gloating and we're all so happy, oh my god, defending champions from La Liga. They got Cunha, Griezmann returns. It's just a barrel of fun for Diego Simeone, and then they draw a duck. What's the latest? What do you think? Do you think Porto was just that resilient, or Atleti just couldn't make it happen?
I think we're seeing what we see from Atletico every single year, and that is that Diego Simeone has some really, especially in recent seasons, some really exceptional attacking options. Gifted Luis Suarez last year to add to that. The return of Yannick Carrasco, who came back as a more mature player, more willing to do the dirty work. And yet they are always sort of reined in by the approach that Simeone has. There are flashes where Atletico look a little bit more proactive. Marcos Llorente playing as a wingback means he doesn't quite get, you know, forward as much as he did early last season, where he was arguably the best playmaker, the best attacking midfielder in Spain. But I think there's always going to be that little identity crisis to Atleti, where they have the players to be more aggressive, to be more attacking, but they've got a manager who is always going to be defense first. And it's a balance that's worked for them, right? Because they've been competitive in Europe. They've won La Liga now twice under Diego Simeone. So there's nothing to reproach about his approach. It works for them. But you just wonder whether the most difficult thing Atleti are going to have to do is make that decision of when they need to go in another direction to get somebody that takes them to the next step. Because, and I'm not saying that moment is now. I think Simeone is arguably the best manager in Spain. He's certainly paid like the best manager in Spain, and the success speaks for itself. But I just always like to see Atleti take the reins off a little bit, be more attractive, more attacking, get chances closer to the opposition's goal, especially with the sort of resurgence that we've seen from Coque Resurrección. No pun intended, in the last couple of seasons. So it's the same argument, the same conversation with Atleti every single year is, okay, we know what the manager's approach is. We know what the talent that they have at their disposal. I think there's still going to be a ridiculously difficult out for absolutely anybody in Europe. But this was clearly not good enough to take the next step, which after winning La Liga is winning the Champions League. I think all three of the Spanish giants are going to struggle in the Champions League. And this may be an obvious thing they say, but we're much more likely to see a Spanish team in Europa League next than win La Liga next, because of the pace of La Liga has slowed down significantly over the years, because there's more fouls, more stoppages, because the game is officiated differently. And when they face the intensity and the permissiveness, really, of referees in the Champions League, they don't necessarily know how to deal with it to the same extent. And so I think all three, including Madrid, who won today, of those big Spanish giants are going to struggle a bit in Europe this year.
Yeah, and Europa League obviously is always a friend to those teams from La Liga. All right, we want to wrap things up, but quickly I just want to mention Sporting Ajax. Sebastian Haller, former West Ham player, scores after 70 seconds and then becomes the first Ajax player, by the way, to score four in a Champions League game. A friend of mine, Rodrigo Azurmendi, said maybe Barcelona got the wrong Dutch manager because Ten Hag is so good at just getting the best out of certain players, especially strikers. Very quickly on that game, Ajax looking good there, Dre Cordero.
Yeah, first to score four and also first to score a hat trick in like a quarter of a century as well. Ajax, give me the Ajaxes and the Atalantas of the world every single Champions League. Honestly, they're teams that are, you're seeing the familiar pattern here. I like teams that are daring. I like teams that are going to try and dominate, to impose their will. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. There was some dodgy defending, by the way, from Sporting. I think all four of those goals, at least three of them, were helped by Sporting not being particularly strong defensively. But after what we saw, what we've seen from Ajax in recent seasons, and their ability to just rejuvenate, right, to sell players and continue to compete at this level, they're one of the most likable clubs in world football, and you're always rooting for them to get into the knockout stage.
Yeah, one of the best youth systems in the world who just produces quality after quality. All right, let's just end it everything with a match day one takeaways, because that is the end of match day one of the Champions League. So let's begin with this, Dre Cordero. Your biggest disappointment, it can be a player, it can be a team, it can be a performance. What's your biggest disappointment from this week?
It's Paris. My biggest disappointment is Paris because they didn't look fluid. They didn't look, I mean, it's a work in progress, certainly. And Pochettino has to be the one to put it all together. They didn't lose, right? So you can go with like a Manchester United, for example, losing away from home with Cristiano, despite Cristiano Ronaldo scoring for them and giving them the opener. But I think for Paris to struggle the way they did, and it's not the result, it's the way that they played and the way that they were dominated in stretches. Yes, they had more possession, but they had fewer chances and they looked the less threatening of the two teams. PSG, especially if Mbappe is forced to miss any significant time, will be, I think, the big disappointment coming away from this week.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. Mine is PSG as well. I said it from the very beginning. You cannot do that when you have all of these assets with you, and that's exactly what they did. All right, Dre Cordero, which team surprised you the most from match day one?
It's got to be Sheriff, I think, right? But because I still haven't really dissected that game, I'm going to say it's the other side of that Paris disappointment. It's Bruges. It's Bruges because of the fact that they stared a European giant down. And yes, Paris maybe don't have the history of some of the European giants, but I think it's undeniable that in 2021 they are a giant of European football. And they've got the quality, and they've got the Champions League finals to back it up. For Bruges to, from the opening minute, go after them, play in their half, play closer to Keylor Navas's goal than to their own, was genuinely surprising, right? Because typically you think a team does that, a team of Bruges' stature does that against Paris Saint-Germain, and Messi's going to score two, Neymar's going to get one, Mbappe's going to get one or two as well. They're going to give away a penalty. But instead, most of that game was played in Paris's final third. And scoreline aside, that is the biggest surprise of this round.
I like it. I like it. All right. What group are you reassessing again? You thought maybe at the very beginning of the Champions League, oh, this is going to be a tough group, or maybe, oh, this is a doable group for a certain club. But is there a group that you think, I have to rethink who's going to come out of this?
Yeah, I think the one that raises a sort of Ancelotti-sized eyebrow for me is Group F. Group F with Young Boys upsetting Manchester United. Yes, it was in Switzerland. And then Villarreal Atalanta played an absolutely terrific game between those two. I'm really high on Villarreal. I love their play. And you know how I feel about Atalanta, who, again, under Gasperini, are one of the most daring teams in Europe and one of the highest scoring teams. This is Atalanta with a budget that's a lot closer to Villarreal, score the kinds of goals and the volume of goals that you expect from a Paris or a Bayern Munich. And so I genuinely look at that group, especially with Young Boys getting that 95th minute game winner, showing a ton of character against Manchester United, when all the narrative and all the momentum is going United's way. The return of Cristiano Ronaldo, who's scoring better than a goal a game since coming back, scores an early goal for them there. And somehow Young Boys still come away with all 3 points from that opener. I think that makes that group even less certain and more of a question mark now than it was coming in, when you saw that parity perhaps between United, Villarreal, Atalanta. Young Boys looked like maybe they'd be the whipping boys rather than the Young Boys in that group. I don't know that that's the case necessarily when they start as the only team with 3 points.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, maybe I might include Group A just because of PSG. I really don't know if it's going to be as quick as Pochettino will figure it out straight away. It might take a little longer. And then you never know. Maybe Leipzig takes advantage at home. That could be an interesting one. Man City, I think, have it covered. But I think you make a very good point about Young Boys and David Wagner. A very good job indeed to get 3 points against Manchester United. Well, that's it. That's our show, everybody. Really appreciate it. Thank you for watching and listening. Follow the Qué Golazo podcast on Twitter, Qué Golazo Pod. Subscribe to the Qué Golazo page on YouTube and hit that notification bell so you'll know when the new episodes come out. We're on CBS Sports app and CBSSports.com. Dre Cordero is on Twitter, but you can hear his beautiful voice. Serie A is coming back again, of course, the weekend. And then we go midweek matches. Anything else you want to plug, Dre Cordero? It's always good to see you, my friend.
No, I'll just say one, this is a ton of fun. And two, this is inarguably the best podcast you'll hear featuring two Latinos with gray beards.
On the beginning of Hispanic Latino Heritage Month. Isn't that great? We're taking over, Dre Cordero. We're taking over.
It's a beautiful thing, finally.
Dre, I really appreciate you. Dre will be with us throughout the entire season, you know, when we get him away from Serie A and all his responsibilities as well with CONCACAF. But Dre, always a pleasure, brother. Muchas gracias, pa.
It's an absolute joy. Join us Sunday, Serie A. We've got Milan, Juventus this weekend. You're not going to want to miss
it. That's a tasty, tasty game. We will see you then. Have a great, great rest of your evening.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.